Okay. I feel actually really inspired being here right now. The title of this program is Cooperating with the Life Principle, Living the Heart of Life Unfolding. And as I tune into that, it awakens in me this inspiration about what the nature of this work is and how precious it is. And for this first segment here, this first session, I'd like to share with you how this process, this way of living, lives in me. And there's certain basic, I guess, structures or concepts or understanding that I think are really valuable. And before I speak, though, any more than that, I want to remember that so much of what's important in this work is related to presence, being conscious, alive, and awake. So I'd like to invite us all to do, just for 60 seconds, is just to do a short eyes closed meditation. Just close your eyes, everyone. And just allow the breath to flow through the body naturally without pushing it. Feel the precious physicality of your body and your being. Allow yourself to arrive in the present moment. And invite you to intend to whatever arises in your inner experience, to be with it, to approach it with deep care and deep kindness. Just take a few breaths and you can open your eyes when you're ready. Such a simple concept that's certainly not new, the idea of being kind to oneself. But this is really the heart of what this work is about. And I'm reminded over and over again that when I begin a session, that where my mind goes, where my attention goes, is really to the heart of what we're doing here. What is this body of work? What is this process that we're doing? I'm reminded that there's something very much at the core of, in my experience and what I sense in others, around this intense desire, intense urging, intense movement to get better, to feel better. And what I like to say is that this work is not about getting better. It's not about improving ourselves. It's not about healing in the sense that where we are is not as good a place as where we want to be. This work really is about this radical relaxation, where we really come to completely and totally relax that part of us that so urgently wants to get to another place. that somehow the notion that over there is better than over here. There's so much in this, because what it arises is the recognition that if over there is better than over here, if I want to get better, then that says something around how I am holding myself right now. That's, and maybe not so much in words, but sometimes in words or judgments or evaluations about ourselves. That I'm evaluating who I am or how I am or what I'm feeling, what I'm experiencing right now as not quite good enough. As I don't like it, I don't enjoy it, and I want to be over it. I want to be through it. Therefore, I want to feel better. Now, I understand that. I think that it's almost universal. But that it goes to something very, very core, I think, at the heart of what I sense to be our suffering. So just kind of invite everyone to notice within yourself this tendency. And notice if somewhere in the seed of this tendency, I want to get over there, because there's something not quite whole or good or right about me right now. There's something off right now. It's uncomfortable. And in that very act of seeking to feel better, seeking some kind of relief, what happens, I think, invariably, is that part of me that I feel uncomfortable about, that I want to get over, to get through, get it over with, feel better, somehow that part of me gets pushed down. The part of me, either overtly or covertly, is judged or evaluated as it's not quite good enough. Therefore, I'm not quite good enough. I'm not enough. There's something not good or right about me right now. And so this for me is very, very key. It's really an important key awareness that if I want to actually engage in the value, in the work of self-compassion, self-acceptance, I want to be aware of this pattern, this tendency in me. I want to be aware of a constant tension that I feel in my body. I feel it emotionally. And if I track it, I can feel my thoughts and my evaluations. It's a tension that I feel, and this tension is something that is there instead of a complete relaxed stance of living. Relaxed and present. So it's about being alive and present, but relaxed, not only physically, but this tension of there's something not quite right about my life right now. There's something not quite settled. And so this constant tension, I think, is the point. It's the focal point of a completely, radically different relationship that I have with myself. Instead of moving away from it, instead of trying to get out of it or through it or heal it or transform this basic distress, tension, whatever you want to call it. I want to turn that around. I want to turn my attention around to the very thing I want to get over, to my fear, to my anger, to the frustration that I'm feeling in relation to people, in relation to life events, in relation to life. I want to completely and radically turn that around so that my relationship to the inner experience is completely different. Instead of moving away from it, instead of trying to feel better, I embrace what I already feel. In order to do that, it takes something that I think that we have not learned. We have not been conditioned. We've learned to do the very thing that actually keeps us in distress to a certain degree. We've learned to avoid it. We've learned to try to fix it. We've learned all kinds of psychological and spiritual tricks to transcend it, to heal it. Almost anything other than embracing it. So even though it's very, very simple, the concept of unconditional acceptance of what is, unconditional acceptance, no matter what, I allow this experiencing in relationship to life, this inner experiencing in relationship to other people, to the world, to life itself, to life events, to come to that inner experiencing in a way that I create an inner spaciousness, an inner allowing, a quality of kindness to myself. This is the one aspect of this work called deep acceptance of what is. And this is the heart of self-compassion. Acceptance is not resignation. So this distinction is really important. Because I accept what is, the mind wants to say, oh, I guess then everything's okay, and that it's okay that this and that is happening, that that thing that I don't like with this person speaking to me a certain way or this event in life, if I accept it, that means I'm not going to do anything about it. And for me, that's not what I mean, although I think that part of our mind, that argumentative part of the mind, can always jump in and interpret anything in such a way that keeps the pattern perpetuated. So that distinction is really important. Unconditional acceptance to what is does not mean I'm resigned to it. What it means is that I no longer resist my feeling. I no longer resist the experiencing that I'm having internally with regard to life itself. I might be having a difficult time in my life. And I think the natural thing or the conditioned thing is I'm frustrated about it. I don't like it. I want it to be different. And how many times does my frustration help things to be different? How many times does my anger or fear about something help it to be different? My experience is that it never does. And yet I continue to resist what is by railing against what is in my frustration, my anger, and my fear. And so this work, this process, is around recognizing the inner resistance I have to accepting what is. And shifting the quality of my inner experience. Now, it's easy to say that, I know. But there's a whole process about how can I then develop this capacity. There's a way to develop it. There's inner maps. There's guideposts. And a lot of what this work is about is around demonstrating and showing the way. It's like you might ask, well, how do I do this? And what I'm offering is a way to do this. Not necessarily easy, but it takes a commitment, a kind of a diligence, and a desire to really come to my inner experience in a way that perhaps I'm not familiar with, I'm not used to. Maybe I've done it a little bit, but maybe there's a deeper way to actually unconditionally accept those parts of me. How do I know that I'm resisting life? I go to the body. I feel the tension. Do I feel tense in my body in relationship to life? And am I anxious? Am I fearful? Do I feel frustrated in relation to life? Is there a chronic kind of tension in my life? something that's kind of always there. Maybe it's always there so much, like a fish in water, that I don't even recognize that I'm feeling tense and stressed. So to recognize this chronic tension, this sort of unease with life itself, is one of the first steps, a precious doorway into a completely different possibility. You know, my mind can say, well, life is always putting up problems. There's always going to be something to be concerned about and frustrated about. It's a never-ending series of problems, and then I solve it or I don't solve it. But my mind says that it's here to stay. I can't change that. And what the mind is always looking outward says, I can't change outer circumstances. And maybe I can't. But one of the things that my mind doesn't know is that I can change the way I meet my inner experience with regard to what is. I actually have the capacity to do that. That is where my power lies. And the power lies in, very simply, how I attend to experiencing, the quality of attention, the quality of awareness. And there are so many simple ways to do that. It's so simple that sometimes it's so elusive. So one of the first steps in addressing the quality of my inner experience is simply breathe. I'm feeling something in relationship to life. I don't like it. It's a problem. I feel tense inside. It's like an automatic, deeply conditioned pattern. What am I going to do? How can I change this person? How can I change myself? This is tension. So the mind is always looking outward towards solution, towards doing. And this process is not about doing, it's about being. So the radical shift in how I live my life, how I function, is around shifting, transforming the identification with doing to a way of being with. And that's done with the power of awareness, the power of attention to my inner experiencing. Breathe. I pause. I'm feeling tense, frustrated, fearful, perhaps angry in relation to a life event. I didn't get someplace on time. I'm feeling tense. Breathe. Can I feel the feeling of that tension, just the energetic of that tension? Here's part of the life principle that helps me to do this work. Everything that can be felt, every experience that my mind calls painful, negative, bad, every experience of distress is life. It is the life force. It is that which animates me and you and all of life, running, manifesting in and through every molecule of my experience. It is life itself. So if something in me is feeling tense, uncomfortable, distressed, I want to turn to that life force because that is the life in me. I want to say to that life force, so to speak, you're welcome. You are welcome here. You are no longer the enemy. You are not the enemy. The feeling of distress, you're not something that is bad or wrong and I want to push away. I want to welcome you into my experiencing. I want to be kind to this inner experience. I want to bring warmth to it. And when I do that immediately, maybe not so immediate, but with patience and with diligence, the quality of this inner experience, which is an inner part of me, starts to relax. the part of me that's fearful can start to speak to me. I remember a quote recently. Don't know who it was attributed to, but if you love something enough, it will speak to you. When I bring care and kindness and love to my inner distressing experience, it speaks to me. And when I listen to it quietly enough, with enough presence and with enough care, and I sense into belonging, then my fear, my distress softens, becomes quieter almost. And then I sense into the longing. There's a deep longing in my distress. There's a deep longing. And in that longing, there's a precious longing for life itself. It's as though the form of my distress, the form of my discomfort, the form of my unease is a form of life longing for life itself. You'd say longing to be seen, to be held, for care, longing to know that I matter, all of those things. This is a way of living. It's not a technique. It's not something that I go necessarily and just do an exercise or go do a workshop. It's a way of living. Day by day, moment by moment, with every bit of my experiencing, every moment of my life. I ask myself, can I be with what is right now? Even though a part of me doesn't like it, even though it doesn't run, it's not aligned with what I want, it's not in harmony with my goals or my needs or my values, can I accept it just as it is? I mean, because when I really look at it, I mean, even logically, even though this doesn't function necessarily on the level of logic, I can't change that. If I can change it, then I will. But I don't change it from the energy of frustration or anger or fear. I change it from the energy of my longing. So that's the other part of this work. Acceptance and longing. When I can unconditionally accept what is, whether it's an inner experience or whether it's my inner experience about life and life events, I am then open. It creates an open possibility to then follow the life stream, follow the inner value, listen to the life force. What is it that the life force is needing and wanting right now? Then I can act or not based on what is it that I'm valuing right now? What is my life force showing me? Just to use that example because it's in my mind. If I'm running late, I know I'm going to be late for an appointment. Can't change that. I relax. I notice the tension in me. The tension actually tells me that I care. Ah, that's it. I care. I care about others. I care about the impact it has. I care about the impact it has on me if I'm arriving late. The feeling of care is so different than the feeling of fear. That's my longing. So, my heart is always longing for life to be fulfilled. For it to be whole, for my relationships to be in harmony. So these two practices are for me the simple practice of life. It is the heart of life unfolding. And there are practices. It's not enough to just hear my words. What do I do to unconditionally accept, to allow my inner distress, my inner experiencing, knowing that the life principle says, because I've learned it by listening to my life principle, my life energy, is that every experience in life is life longing for itself, is a life force desiring the liberation so that it can come into life. That is the transformational process. Knowing that it's not resignation, because that's simply another function of the mind, the evaluative mind that gives up and says, well, I have to accept what it is. Knowing that that's not it, that acceptance actually creates an inner spaciousness. So when I really accept something, I can really relax. Then it creates the possibilities for what can I do here? What can I actually do? If I want to actualize my values in my life, I tune into what I long for. I tune into what I value in the face of what I can do. And then I follow that while I'm accepting what is. So this twofold practice, twofold way of living. Always bring care to myself. Always bring care to the inner distress. Allowing it to transform with compassion, with kindness, allowing the life energy in the tension to relax so that it reveals the longing in there. And then follow the longing. This is this whole course. It's the only thing I share in my work. It's so simple. And we approach this work over and over and over again, and sometimes I use different words, different language, different entry points, but it's always the same. It's the essential simplicity that, because it's so simple, I think it can sometimes be elusive to actually implementing it, manifesting this in my life. And there are many different avenues, many different sort of avenues into this practice, inner maps, inner guideposts, and throughout this course I'm going to share a few of them with you. And I'll just name a couple of them right now. One is the recognition that there are different dimensions in my inner life. When I share these three primary dimensions. One is what I would call the very essence of my being, the very deep, pure authenticity of my being. And when I'm in this, I know it. When I'm living it, I know it. There's joy. I'm in a creative flow. I'm in a flow in which there's love. And there's no, or very little, I don't know that I'm in it every 100% of the time, but I'm in it when there's a preponderance of my essence. And the qualities of my essence are one of naturally creative, caring, compassionate, engaged, fun. So these are the qualities that when I'm living this, I'm living my essence. And then another dimension is really based on my woundedness, the conditioning, the traumas that I've experienced, mostly the traumas. And this is the zone of my vulnerability, where I feel raw, where some of the past pains are still in my system. I've been wounded. And to touch into my vulnerability, there's a fragility there. There's a tenderness. There's often a fear. It's very tender, very raw. It's the open corridor to life itself, to my very being. For me, when I say vulnerability, my experience is not that I'm vulnerable to you or to life, and therefore it's dangerous. But vulnerability is that I'm open to the life force running in and through me. I'm open to feeling authentic feelings deeply. There's a very beautiful and tender space to be in my vulnerability. And then the other part of it is this part of me that is basically a function of this tension I referred to before. It's the part of me that views myself and life as separate. It's the part of me that when it's active, I'm constantly defending and protecting myself against what might be, against my vulnerability. I'm defending myself against looking bad because I want to look good. I want to be accepted. I want approval. That part of me wants approval. So the defensive and protective mechanism is the part of my system that keeps me separate, that fears that if I'm vulnerable, that it's dangerous. Therefore, it does not allow me to be open and authentic in my vulnerability. Protects me. Defends against anything where I might look bad or wrong. And views the world in terms of the dualities of good and bad, right and wrong. So, these three zones of my inner experience are part of the guideposts that I'm offering here. That in order to attend to my inner life with compassion that creates the possibility for life to actually transform, I found that for me it requires my awareness of each of these three dimensions of my experience. And one of the practices I call tracking. I want to track at any one moment which is the zone or the dimension that I am predominantly in. Because when I track it, then I am more able to proceed, to know what is the most life-serving. And we'll go more into detail about what that entails. Another process is around acknowledging and naming my own responsible authorship of everything in my inner experience. I am the author of my thoughts. Therefore, I'm responsible for my thoughts. I am the author of my feelings. No one or no thing or no event makes me feel any way. Therefore, I'm responsible for my feelings. To identify them, to name them, to feel them, and to express them. I am the creator, the author of my deep needs and what I deeply long for. They emanate from my heart. Therefore, the I, whatever that is, the authentic self is the author. So the recognition that I am the author, I am fully self-responsible, is really key. And there are practices and processes that allow me to take full ownership for what is mine. Because whenever, for example, if I'm judging you, I'm not taking responsibility for my thoughts. Because if I say, you're inadequate, or you're irresponsible, I'm actually having a thought about you being responsible and taking the thought to be true and therefore not fully owning it. And we see it shows me a beautiful way to own my thoughts. Fully responsible for when you did what you did, that's just the observation. I'm evaluating that as irresponsible, for example. When I take full authorship for it, full ownership for it, I'm no longer blaming you. Therefore, you're free to be in relationship to me that has greater possibilities than when I'm judging you. So there's a very practical and powerful implications for self-responsibility. So these are practices, and they all have very similar pathways to attend to my thinking, the reactive thinking, to tend to my feelings, to tend to the bodily felt sensations, the energetic, to tend to the deep longing. The inner territory is very similar in each of these practices. And now is the time to pause. So I'm interested in connecting with you as a group. And just I'd like to hear from you how this is resonating with you.
I actually have a question.
Yeah.
I'm curious about, you talked about the three aspects of our inner experience. So one of them being vulnerability and the other being the mechanisms by which we defend ourselves and react, right? I think I understood. Sometimes I get this feeling that the contraction that I feel in my body that I would normally identify as the vulnerable aspect of myself is my vulnerable self trying to play the role of the defender. Does that sound familiar in any way?
I've never heard that put that way.
Yeah.
But here's my experience of it. The contraction in my experience is always a function of the defensive and protective part.
Ah.
And one of the things I've also experienced is that it's not as though there's like this wall, discrete wall between the defensive and protection part and the vulnerability. I mean, it's right there.
Yeah.
My vulnerability is right at the very edge of my defensiveness. It's rare that we ever tune into it, though, because we're so busy attending to defensive, protective measures. But for me, the vulnerability is right there. And there's a little bit of a crossover in the zone between protection and vulnerability. There's a zone there that kind of combines both of them. And so when that part of my protector touches a sense of vulnerability, it goes into action.
Yeah.
And contracts and defends against feeling that. And the strategies are always what I call enacting the defensive and protective part by speaking in a certain way, by either aggressing or withdrawing. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Because that's my experience, is I'm troubled. There seems to be a zone where I can't distinguish between the two. The contraction itself seems to be my vulnerability and the attempt to defend myself at the same time.
Yeah.
There's no way to tease them apart.
Yeah, and that coincides with what I just shared, is that they're actually there together. But for me, it's valuable to be able to distinguish what part of it is the defensive part and what part of it is the vulnerable part.
Yes.
Does that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense.
Right, okay.
So yesterday morning, I woke up in a lot of mental pain. And I went to a really dark place. And I decided, you know, a voice said to me, what you resist persists. So I decided not to resist it. And it was interesting because I did notice my wanting to, you know, use NVC skills and understand it. And so I'm realizing I'm not totally clear about what you're proposing, because it sounds like there's this be with it and accept it, and something about belonging. So I was sitting with both. And so I guess I'm asking for a clarity about, is it both? Is it also sort of taking it apart and examining it and seeing the longing that's there while holding a profound acceptance for the experience.
When you say, did you say belonging or
the longing
is
yes.
there? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, for me, yes, is that there is in the experience of complete acceptance of what is, no longer resisting it. And, but there's a process to get to that place. I just can't automatically get there. There's a process for what do I do? How do I attend to the inner experience that allows me to come to the place of acceptance? So we didn't go into that yet.
Yes, yeah. Thank you.
So there's attending to it. And the attending to it encompasses those elements of my experience. Attending to it means recognizing the story and the thoughts and the evaluations that are going on in me that are creating the distress. And listening to that voice. Empathizing with that inner voice, therefore creating more inner spaciousness.
So when I think about it, I think it's like a brave place to go. And then there's this tendency to feel loneliness.
Yeah. Okay. So whatever occurs, if loneliness arises, then I want to invite that part of me. Here you are, loneliness. Welcome. See and sense.
There's different layers
yes.
of that and go into all of them with this profound acceptance and
yeah.
welcoming.
Yeah. That's it. Okay. Thank you.
I'm starting to think of, in terms of the word relationship, having a relationship with my inner experience. Is that...
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yes. As a matter of fact, I want to say that when I think of transformation, what we transform is not the experience. What we transform is our relationship to the experience. This is the key. So much, I think, my interpretation of trying to change or transform is we focus on the experience and try to change that, rather than how we are holding our relationship to it. It is, as you said, very precisely, our relationship to the inner experience.
Thank you.
Yeah.
When you spoke of self-responsibility, something came up in me that said, I'm responsible for how my woundings live in me now, but not the original wounding.
Yeah. I like that.
Response to that.
I resonate with that, and I'm really glad to hear that distinction. For me, here's the way I hold it. I'm responsible for my inner experiencing now. What happened at the original wounding is not something that is actually relevant right now, because I don't know what happened. It probably happened as an earlier part of my life, probably as a child. And as a child, I'm not responsible for what happened to me. And I certainly did not have the inner resources to be able to feel what I felt in a way to hold that pain. It's probably one of the things that contributes to inner trauma with children, is that children do not have that capacity. And so it's important to make that distinction that I think you're making, but I want to name more clearly, is that responsibility is not blame. It's not self-blame. I'm not blaming myself. But I'm holding my present experience. If I'm carrying the trauma from the past, I'm carrying it now. And how I hold that present experience is holding it and being with it in a full self-responsible way. Meaning, this is my experience. Is that helpful? Yeah.
There are several things that I could talk about around my experience, but one thing I'm noticing in myself is that I both want to feel what I'm feeling, even if it's painful, and I don't want to feel it. But it's on some level I'm noticing kind of the thought process is that it's like I'm creating it too. So So I think you spoke about attention. Is that kind of what you mean? Like there's a wanting to feel and experience all of that, whatever it is, and also a resistance to it.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'm just noticing that that goes on a lot in me, and I'm just noticing how my mind continues to create this story, which brings up this pain, and it's related to what's gone on in the past, and yet the more I sit with that, it's like the more I see, wow, I've been in this for a long time. And I almost don't notice that I'm in it until I sit with it for a while, and then I start to see it, and then I'm starting to notice how there might be a possibility for something different. I don't know. Do you have any? Does that resonate with you? Or?
It does. I mean, one response I have is that yes, I agree that you're seeing the possibility for something different as a function of your attending to it, noticing that there's a part of you that I'm hearing wants to experience everything you're feeling. But there's another part of you that doesn't want to. But both of those are part of your inner experience. So can you attend to both of them equally? That would be part of the work. And then there's the first step, which we'll probably go into more specifically as I demonstrate working with someone, is that once you recognize the story, it doesn't stop there. There are further explorations in attending to that story and thought that can create the spaciousness, create the inner condition in which the natural transformation can take place. Those are the further steps. Okay.